I see the prejudice fading away. I see the black and white turn into gray. I can see a rainbow coming away. Somewhere in the cracks between the sand and the sea. Somewhere in the future of humanity. I see a place with nations erased. I see a time with no boundary line. I can see the day where love conquers hate. Somewhere in the cracks of time. Somewhere in the future of your children and mine. I see storm clouds gathering around. I can feel the rain come pouring down. I see the darkness, then I can see the dawn when the new world comes along.
My name is Roland Washington. I'm a member of the KPFA Labor Collective. I'm a licensed psychiatric technician for the City and County of San Francisco, and I'm also a shop steward for SEIU United Healthcare Workers West. I have with myself Carl Bryant, Ella Rayford, and Brenda McGotham, and we're going to talk about segregation. Ella, can you tell me where you were born and where you grew up at?
I was born in Louisiana, Rayville, Louisiana, but I was raised up here in Oakland, California.
And when was the first time that you witnessed segregation?
Well, I recognized segregation when I went on a trip to visit my grandmother in Louisiana. Well, what happened is we had to catch the bus to visit my grandmother. And here in California, I've been used to going in the front, you know, in the front where everybody else go. And my mother pulled me back and said, no, we have to go around to the back. And looking in the window, seeing the white people sitting down with nice white tablecloths and yellow napkins, I never will forget that. Then we had to go to the back where they had just concrete floor and a jukebox. Was really, at 12 years old, was really... It bothers me right now to think about how, you know, people was treated there. And seeing those signs saying white only, I'd never experienced that.
And what was it like when you got to the bus station?
Well, if you wanted food, you had to go around to the side of the building where the cook was cooking food for the people, you know, the white people in front. You had to order your food from there. And that was, I didn't even want to eat after I saw that.
And I understand from that point on, you never went back.
I didn't go back until I was an adult, you know, became an adult. And I think that at that time they had made some changes.
Brenda, I understand you were born in New Orleans?
In New Orleans, yes.
And was it segregated where you grew up?
Yes, it was. I was born in New Orleans in 1947. And when I started school, the schools was segregated. I went to a segregated Catholic school, and we had to sit in the back of the bus. And I didn't like it. It left scars. And we went to visit my great-grandmother in Gloucester, Mississippi. And at that time, we saw the Ku Klux Klan burning three black men on a cross. And my mom just told us to get on in the car, and my brother kept driving. So those are scars that has been left with me all my life.
I understand that even though this was a segregated environment, that your parents were very active in union activities down there.
Yes, my father was a longshoreman, and my mother helped to organize a couple of unions in New Orleans, the laundry workers and the sewing factory workers. She was very, very active. She was proactive union, and that's what she did. And she worked in a sewing factory during World War II, making military clothes for the military. And she also, she was the second cook at LSU in Baton Rouge. So she tested tanks in the shipyard. She did a lot. But in 1954, at New Zion Baptist Church, under the pastor, the late pastor, A.L. Davis, Jr., the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was organized in New Orleans at And that was the church where I was baptized in, and that's where it took off.
Can you tell us what union you're involved with and how long you've been a labor, a member of a union?
It is now called SEIU Local 24/7, but in the beginning it was the International Union of Security Officers, and I've been a member of that union for 30 years.
And I also understand that you were a business rep?
Yes, for 19 years. Until the last 3 years I've been off ill.
And then what other labor affiliations do you
are you involved? Belong to? Mm-hmm. Okay, I belong to the task force at UC Berkeley. I belong to AFRAM. And I also belong to CBTU, the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. And I also, in the AFRAM, I hold the I'm the Northern California Vice President of the Disability Committee Caucus.
And AFRAM is the African American Caucus of Service International
Union.
SEIU.
Yes.
Ella Rayford, what are your union affiliations?
Okay, UHW West. I have been on the executive board for 16 years. I'm also chairperson of the African American Caucus since 1999, after Shirley Ware passed away. I'm also first vice of CBTU, and I'm a member of APRI. And I'm also one of the vice presidents of our international AFRAM Caucus.
And then we have Carl Bryant with us. Carl, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Carl Bryant, National Association of Letter Carriers, and also a member of the Labor Collective here at KPFA. I'd also like to say that this is the KPFA Dr. Martin Luther King birthday show, and I'd like to read this quick paragraph. Here is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in a speech at the State Convention of the Illinois AFL-CIO in 1965. The labor movement was the principal force that transformed misery and despair into hope and progress. Out of its bold struggle, economic and social reform gave birth to unemployment insurance, old age pensions, government relief for the destitute, and above all, new wage levels that meant not mere survival, but a tolerable life. So that's what we're talking about here, ladies and gentlemen, about unions and how they transform the lives of working class people here in the United States back in 1965 and Martin Luther King. But now we're talking about segregation and how it got started and how unions have been affected by segregation.
So, Brenda, you said you were the first black either staff person, or was it a business rep, or how did it work?
I was the first black business rep in the East Bay, and that was I came over in 1985. I ran for a seat on the executive board, and at that time, the president of the International Union of Security Officers was Charles A. Newport, and he asked me, would I like to become a rep? And I had to think about it, and I told him, yes, I would take it. I took the job, and it carried on for 19 years, and it was a learning experience, and I did a lot of things to help my members.
I think it's interesting that we're talking about in the 60s, and then even before that with your parents, that they were organizing unions and being parts of unions, but in 1980-ish, here you're the first black business rep in a local union.
Yes.
In the San Francisco Bay Area, that.
It happens.
So let me ask this question. Do you feel that prior to that, the union was was segregated?
Yes, it was. It was Lily White.
So even after Dr. Martin Luther King made his statement, segregation was still going on. Is that right, Ella?
Yes.
And how do you feel about segregation as far as your union was concerned at that time?
Well, I've been in, it was formerly called Local 250. Shirley Ware was the first black woman that had any high position. She was the secretary treasurer of Local 250 until she passed away. And at that time, I, you know, began to see more people of color being in more active roles. And so that was 1988 when, you know, when she was elected. So, and as a child, my grandmother and my father, they all came here in the 40s and worked in shipyards. Matter of fact, my grandmother's picture was in the paper from when she worked in Vallejo, California, as a shipyard worker. So all of my family and my mother were all labor people.
When your mother was working for the shipyards, was it segregated at that time?
Yes, it was. My grandmother always, you know, made sure that, you know, we understood that we had to have education if we wanted to get anywhere, because if you didn't have an education, you didn't have a leg to stand on. She was very, you know, strict about that.
Looking at the way things are going now, do you think things are any better now for blacks in labor than it was in the 40s, 50s?
I still think we have a ways to go.
I think we are reverting back. Out of all the things that was done, and Martin Luther King losing his life for to make things better for us in this day and time, and this is 2006, things are worse. Even in the workplace, it's reverting back to what it was 30, 40 years ago. The top does not reflect the bottom. Even in your locals today, they are going back to what it was, Lily White.
As a union member myself, a member of the National Association of Letter Carriers, I can attest to the fact that our locals, majority of the locals of letter carriers and our national offices are Lily White, and they're white males mostly. So is that a reflection of what your unions, Ella and Brenda, your unions also represent?
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm actually a member of the same union with Ella, and it's interesting how the rhetoric is that we're all in this together and we're all brothers and sisters and et cetera, but yet if we're trying to deal with issues of discrimination, oppression, power, racism, or things like that, then all of a sudden that's put on the back burner. Immigration, gay rights, and et cetera are the things that we want to deal with right at the moment, but you have people of color who are immigrants, people of color who are gay and who are oppressed. And if we never deal with the issues that this country was founded on, which is racism and sexism and classism, then as rank and file members, we're never going to see what we want accomplished. And it's very interesting how this is supposed to be a democracy, but the democracy seems to be like Brenda originally stated, where it's a top-down type of thing.
My members does not reflect our president, vice president, and secretary treasurer. It just does not. The membership is 90% people of color, and it just really does not reflect it. And, I mean, it had came to the point where it's do as I say or move on. And that's what it's about. It's about if you are a strong African-American, male or female, you have a hard time getting to move up in different positions in the union. Even if you're allowed to apply for the position, you're not going to get it.
It's really hard when you've been around for 40 years and you're fixing to almost get ready to retire, that, you know, my children are coming up and I would like to see somebody of color in power or have the, you know, have the choice to be elected and, you know, be and making the decisions, not taking orders, but make decisions.
We would like to have a voice, a say in decision makings and what goes on in our unions around across the United States of America, and we just not getting the job is just not getting done. And as I have looked over the years, I see we are disappearing. African Americans are being left out. And the information is not getting to the membership. It's just getting to a handful of people and that's it. And it's being the decisions are being made by a handful of people.
I've also been in unions for the past 20 years or so. And I have seen, like you, I have seen no drastic changes in the makeup of the leadership of those unions, including the AFL-CIO and the Change to Win. I'd like to say I hope and pray that there are changes in the labor forces and that we get more people of color involved.
I want to thank you guys for being here, Ella Rayford, Brenda McLaughlin, and then my co-host, Carl Bryan.
I see toxic waste dumped on the shore.